welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on Tour, broadcasting live from Fees, Portland. I'm Andrew Friedman, host of Andrew Talks to Chefs. And before we kick things off again this afternoon, we'd like to thank Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. And I am now joined by Diego Galicia, Enrico Torres. Did I do okay, guys?
Perfect. Yeah.
How you doing?
Okay. Of Michli Restaurant. Ooh, did I get it right?
Michli.
Perfect. Michli. I apologize. I got too nervous about it in our pre-interview. Michli Restaurant.
That's correct.
And San Antonio. Before we get into what you guys are up to here at Feast, can you tell me a little about, Rico, let's start with you. Can you tell me a little bit about your restaurant?
Sure. So Michli is a 12-seat restaurant inside of a renovated train car. The train car is actually an old refrigeration car from the 30s, I believe.
Is that really, right?
Yeah. One time the actual owner of the train car that left it there in 78 came into the restaurant, kind of told us the story, so it was great. But the restaurant itself is it's a way for us to separate Mexican gastronomy and Tex-Mex, because down in San Antonio and the South Texas area, everything's just so very Tex-Mex, and we really wanted to draw the line in the sand and wanted to separate those two and put it on that pedestal and show these incredible histories and traditions and cooking ideals that Mexico has to offer, including ingredients that are just incredible. And we've been doing that for about 5 years. What we do, Michli means cloud in Nahuatl, which basically means that the menu travels just as clouds travel. And we're switching out menus every couple months.
You guys change it every, 45 days?
45 dinners, yeah.
Yeah.
And switching it out, tasting menu. People come in, taking the system. We're telling them stories about every plate. And there's a lot of value behind every dish that we're doing, because there's just so much information and history behind it. And we really wanted to get creative with that. And we're just really pushing the envelope on doing those dishes, but at the same time really respecting where they come from and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And it's just been a really incredible journey.
Yeah. So, Diego, can you tell me, was this something that you two, before you opened the restaurant, was this like a shared point of view that you two had? Was this something you guys would talk about? Like what was the evolution of this?
Yeah, so Rico and I met almost 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Almost seven.
Yeah, it goes by fast. We were doing pop-ups with other cooks in the city.
Yeah.
And it was like an outlet for us to do things that we wanted to do aside from our host restaurants, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get together and throw these dinners with other cooks. And when Rico and I met, we pretty much became friends immediately, that first dinner. And then we just kind of paired off every time. Every time we did a dinner with the other cooks, Rico and I would kind of pair up and we became really good friends. And then one afternoon, we met up and I said, "Hey Rico, let's do this, but let's do it together. If I jump, you jump, and then we do this, right?" And we put our money together, which was not a lot. We had 15 grand. That gets you pretty much nowhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, "This is all we have together," and we just kind of started looking around. We found the train cart. The rent was really cheap, and we just went in with chalk one day and we drew the fridges on the wall where the logos were gonna go and the flat tops and all that stuff. And that was, it'll be 5 years in October that
crazy
happened. We've been together ever since, pretty much every day.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay, you grew up in
Toluca,
Mexico.
That's correct.
You grew up north of the border in Texas.
Right.
How has that, if at all, of like when you just said you wanted to kind of draw the line, right, between Tex-Mex and, like, you two literally grew up on different sides of that line.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to meet in the middle.
How has that informed the collaboration and the way the restaurant?
I'm going to answer that in a very,
if at all.
It's very simple. I'm going to answer in a Rico way.
Okay.
Because we have something in common. It's in our DNA. We have this intangible thing that we share together that speaks to each other without us having to talk to each other, which is our identity, our Mexicanhood, right? And that's what pretty much glues us together. And that's what pushed the restaurant to get to where it is now, you know? So we have this unspoken thing that we share together that's in our DNA. Both of us being of Mexican heritage, that kind of just flows and works and, you know.
Right, and this desire to respect it and to just see it for all that beauty that it is. And sometimes you see, like, these, I hate to use this word, but these bastardized versions of Mexican food, and then they turn into these, like, melted cheesy things and a little salad on the corner. And yeah,
it's out of respect. We wanted to put Mexican back and polish it up and kind of heal it up a little bit, and that's kind of what started.
I mean, what cracks me up is I grew up in Florida, and I had a friend, actually my oldest friend in the world, his mother was from San Antonio, and she refused to eat Mexican food in Florida, like, right? But so she considered herself a real Mexican food connoisseur, right? But not by your guys' standards, I'm assuming, probably.
Well, the thing is that Tex-Mex, it's its own thing. You know, it's its own cuisine. It's its own mixture of things. So what Ricona is trying to do, we have 31 states in Mexico, so we're trying to get people out of the idea that Mexico is just that. You know, rice and beans and fajitas and nachos. It's not true. We have 31 states. We have hundreds of indigenous groups of the area in Mexico. Ingredients native to the country. And that's something really cool that we push a lot, like vanilla, for example. You know, you go to the store and like, oh, French vanilla, Tahitian. It's from Tabasco, you know? It's like all these things. Tomatoes, they're so important, native to Mexico or the Americas.
Yeah.
You know, pizza, Italian cuisine, tomatoes everywhere. It's like, well, yeah, they came from the Americas. So these really important staples, we're trying to push them and put them back in a pedestal that people understand how important Mexican food is.
Is this, when you describe the 31 states, right? Is this comparable in terms of a moment in time? You know, couple of decades ago, Americans didn't really, when they thought of Italian food, it was Northern and Southern, right? One was kind of red sauce and whatever, and the other one was heavier and, right? No one understood that there were, 20 regions in Italy, right? But now there are restaurants all over the United States that are hyper-focused, right? Is this a similar moment for you, at least as far as you guys go and your sort of the mission you're describing, in terms of educating your diners? Is it similar?
Yes, but it goes really fast. It goes every 45 days, and that's it. You won't see Oaxaca for another 5 years, you know? So it goes really fast, and it's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Coming up with a successful tasting menu that sells out every time, and then it's gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
That is extremely difficult.
Yeah. So what's the development process like as, like, do you start the next one as soon as the current one is?
Oh, it's always in motion.
It's always in motion. How far out are you planned? Like, how many?
You mean for the next menu?
Yeah. Like, how many, do you know what you're doing 4 or 5 menus from now?
No, at least.
I don't mean the food itself, but I mean, like, what you're focusing on?
Yeah, at least the next menu, maybe the one after that. But it's a constant conversation, really, and it develops organically. And what we started talking about a couple of weeks ago might turn into something completely different by the end, but it has to kind of all come out.
Uh-huh.
And then we figure out what that's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's constantly trying to inspire yourself wherever you find it.
Yeah.
Constantly. And saving it and looking back at it.
Yeah. When you, how far out do you start taking dishes out for test drives?
Whenever we get a chance, we start working on any dish.
Start developing.
Yeah, if we get a moment with some free time, we'll start working on it. Good ideas. As through the years, what's really great now is that we've been really good at a lot of techniques. So now if we have an idea, we know that we can get this out of the way a little bit faster.
We have the tool set. Yeah.
Mentally, physically, it's all there, and it can happen.
Yeah.
So now it's just really the idea of, like, well, how much cooler can this dish be?
Right.
And then you're just racking your brains and stressing yourself out until it's perfect.
Do one of you tend to be sort of the idea person and the other one sort of the editor, or do you both do both those roles?
I don't know. I mean, Diego's got a lot of great ideas. He's got a lot. He's really a visionary. I like
the
that.
Thing about Rico is that he's a very soul food cook. You know, his food has a lot of deep flavors.
Yeah.
You know, they just meld well together.
Uh-huh.
So when you put some innovation and some touches and like a mixture of both of our things, you get some pretty brilliant results, right?
Dave was a really good painter. I'm a really good paint maker.
I love it. That's great. That's an answer. That's a better answer than the question.
And it's two heads are always better than one, you know? And a lot of chefs ask us, hey, how you guys make it work? You know, there's two chefs in the restaurant. Yeah, it's two chefs in the restaurant, and, you know, we...
But this is a thing right now. Yeah. There's so many chef teams.
Stronger together. I heard that somewhere.
But I think it's... No, but I was talking... You know, I had Sam Smith in here before you guys from Tusk here in town. You know, he's with Josh McFadden. I mean, they have two places, but... you know, in New York, there's a restaurant like Battersby that had Joel Grodnick and Walker Stir. But, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, in the year 2018, you go to a restaurant, and part of what you expect in, like, a known restaurant, right, or a restaurant that's been publicized and gotten press is, like, the vision of a chef, right? And it's interesting to me when two people are able to come together, but the food doesn't seem in conflict with itself, right? Like, it seems to all come from one point of view, right?
It funnels into one.
Yeah, but it's amazing to me that two people can do that, that could be a team effort.
Yeah, like Sarah Heimessen and Sarah Kramer out of in Kesman in LA.
Yeah.
Phenomenal team. Yeah. You know? So two heads are always better than one. It's double the stories, you know? There's double the content and double the inspiration. So it's been a great adventure.
You know? That's great. That's great. Yeah. It's fun watching you. I can tell the energy between you guys is it's special.
Yeah, it's a blast. Our chemistry
is
awesome.
Is it we're like brothers?
Yeah, I mean, it comes off that way.
Even our own family dynamic kind of sets it off in the same way. He comes from a family of three brothers. I have three brothers as well. And
oh my gosh,
it's our parents are very much the same. I go to his mom's house, and I feel at home over there.
Wow. And the thing is that Rico, the way it works, and any chefs out there that want to have a teammate on your side, is that we let the restaurant dictate what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Even if Rico and I wouldn't agree on something, we literally sit outside, literally, and look at the train car and be like, "What do you need?" And then out of nowhere, it needs this. Maybe it's something that Rico doesn't want to do or that I don't want to do, but we ask the restaurant, "What do you need?" Mm-hmm. And 100% of the time, it needs this.
I love this.
And for 5 years, we've been so successful because we listen to what the restaurant has to say. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're not fighting like a stubborn mule pulling that. No, stop and just listen to the restaurant. And that's when it's happened. Mm-hmm. And we've been open almost five years. You know?
You know, it's funny. You talk the way a lot of writers talk. You know, a lot of novelists say that when they sit down to write, once you've created your characters, you just sort of follow them, mm-hmm. you know, and it's almost out of your hands. That's kind of the way you two talk about your.
Oh yeah, the restaurant.
About your project.
A larger entity than us, and from the get. It was the concept, the mission behind it. It was way bigger than us, and we've been just trying to keep up with the baby, and it's just.
I love it.
Growing and it's amazing.
Okay, so tell me, because when we were sitting outside, I was like, "Wow, you guys are really being worked." Here at Feast Portland. Tell me, let's go back and forth. So, Diego, let's start with you.
Sure.
What have you guys done? You're doing four things. You've done some of this already.
Yeah.
Okay, so run it by from the beginning. What have you done here?
So we started yesterday. Awesome event, Night Market. We had a great time. That's a really fun way to get in touch with the local Portland people. And you get some FaceTime with them because we come from far away. You know, maybe a lot of them won't go to South Texas, but it's a great time to have some FaceTime with them. And they have questions and they've heard about you and you get to talk to them. And it's a great event. We also have a Williams-Sonoma event here in a couple of hours.
What have you been serving?
Oh, we did one of the best bites we've developed in a long time. We had a wonton that was full with a braised short rib.
Okay.
And then Rico made this really phenomenal salsa matcha, which is like a fried chili oil.
Yeah, it's fried chilies, roasted up with some garlics and good extra virgin olive oil and
some Texas pecans
and
pecans.
Oh man, it's like this jar that you keep on the counter and you just put it on just about everything, from savory to dessert. It's so good.
And it was crunchy. It was weather appropriate. It was warm. You know, it was hot. It was easy
to execute, mm-hmm. easy to transport. Because you got to think of all of those things to make it happen at that last moment.
And so, Texas is far, so we brought almost 150 pounds of food. So you have to be quick, and your execution has to be tasty as well. You know, so that was our bite yesterday. We have a phenomenal vanilla cured duck we're serving here in an hour or so, mm-hmm. With pickled apples and a mole that Rico made that's off the chain.
Tell me about this vanilla thing.
I'm kind of obsessed with it lately.
Is this a Mexican?
Yeah. So vanilla is from Tabasco, a little orchid, right? And then from Tabasco, kind of went all over the world. So when you go to like Bath and Body Works, oh, it's Tahitian vanilla. You're like, it's from Mexico. So I'm really trying to protect these things that we have.
But
in
you would have like vanilla, the duck, that duck preparation is that's traditional.
No, but it's part of the terroir, right? That's the thing. It's that Mexican food doesn't have to be what you see in a book. It can be what you find in the wild, right? For example, we have a dish right now of a pickled apples, duck, and a butter sauce, right?
Yeah.
In Mexico, we have a huge Amish community.
Yeah.
Mennonites, and they make phenomenal butter.
Yeah. I'm asking because, there was a chef years ago, I think it was Sandorens, who did lobster with vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very imitated in France and in kind of Nouvelle-influenced mm-hmm. restaurants here. But a lot of people looking back didn't really care for that. But there was a chef in L.A., actually, who did a vanilla. No, he did a sassafras duck. Mm. But anyway, when you said the vanilla thing, it was interesting to me. But that's not like a radical. It's not a radical notion.
It's not a traditional
use of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
But it's part of the terroir. It grows really well in Tabasco. And it's we have waterfowl in Mexico. So Mexican food is no longer what you see in old cooking books from Mexico. It's not. It has to change. It's changing. It's evolving. So why not take stuff that grows in our terroir and apply it? At the end of the day, it's Mexican ingredients. You know? And by definition, it's Mexican food.
Mm-hmm. You know? Okay. And so back home, what kind of mix of clientele do you get? Is it like...
We have a broad spectrum. Yeah, we have a diverse. We had young couples that come to dinner for anniversaries.
Yeah, I'd say at least half of them aren't even from San Antonio. Mm-hmm. A lot of them will make the drive from Houston for the dinner that night only. We've had a lot of people plan their whole vacation just to come to San Antonio to eat at Michley. A lot of anniversaries.
A lot of Chicago guests come. Since they like the whole, you know, fine dining scene in Chicago, they hear about the restaurant, they come down. San Francisco.
A lot of foodies.
New York.
Yeah, a lot of
it's
foodies.
It's great. That was the coolest part, watching people come from all over the country to kind of have dinner with us.
Uh-huh. Right. What kind of reaction do you get from people of Mexican descent or actually from Mexico? Like, what kind of reaction do you get to what you're doing with it?
Sometimes we get some tears.
Yeah.
And do you?
That right there was the standard. Like, we want to make some people cry because...
Tears of what?
Joy.
What are the tears?
Joy.
Yes, but what is that
of,
from?
Nostalgia of remembering something that they haven't had in so long because they haven't been home in so long or because someone has prepared it that way or just reminds them, you know, these flavors that aren't always translated the exact same way once they're on the other side of the border. And they find it there. It's like, this is my, you know, I grew up doing this or eating this. And just that, when it gives you the goose hairs and... Just that's it. That's the standard to try to get a little tearjerk out of it.
See, when you first said it, what I was wondering is, and I don't know if it's an issue anymore. You know, I know people who came from that area years ago who had a, you know, Mexican background, and they were always a little embarrassed by their native cuisine. They were, you know, they felt like, does this ring a bell for you? Have you heard this?
Of course. I mean,
was this an issue for you guys at all?
It's always been there.
It has.
Yeah.
That's not gone.
Especially now more than ever. But it's always been there.
Yeah, because when people started celebrating Mexican food in this country, right, which I guess you go back to like the 80s when this started happening, that was like a big deal. So I'm just wondering, is that when you said tears, I thought it was like to see it kind of styled out like this, to see it celebrated like this, to see it treated almost in an artistic way.
Well, that too.
Yeah,
that too.
They like the fact that we polish it and kind of shine the apple back and put it in a pedestal. That's what they like, that, hey, at least somebody respected Mexican food again, because it's been dragged all over the ground.
Right.
So we're really trying to do our part in kind of, you know, shining and making it look bright again.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, national especially do appreciate that.
Do you guys feel connected to this kind of moment that's happening right now with Mexican food in the U.S.?
100%.
You feel connected to that?
100%. It was really cool this year watching the beer nominees for this year, the long list, a lot of Mexican restaurants. And that was really fun to watch. That was really cool to watch.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've been referring to this as our speed dating Airstream.
Yeah,
we're out of time. But I have been talking with Diego Galicia and Rico Torres of Michley Restaurant. And I made light of it earlier, but I really apologize that I got the name wrong early in the show. I hate when people mispronounce stuff. I get mad at least twice during every Oscar telecast. Anyway, guys, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And great to sit down and talk. Enjoy the rest of the festival.
Thank you so much.
And before we totally sign off, I do need to thank again Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible, and to our engineer, Aaron Parecki, for taking such great care of us here today. Thank you, Aaron.